For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, welcome back.
Hey, welcome back. It is our favorite time of the week. You know that we love to interview guests, and this is a special one. It's a new perspective. We are picking her brain about all of the coach's kid lifestyle. So we want y'all to have the rest assurance piece that your kids will turn out okay. So just hang in there. We have so many questions that we want to ask her, but we're not going to ruin the surprise. We're going to toss it on over to her and let her introduce herself.
Hi guys, my name is Grace Kelly. I am currently down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and my dad is head coach Brian Kelly, and he's been a coach for over 30 years, and I'm now going on 24, and we've moved around a bunch, but here we are. I'm still standing, still got a good head on my shoulders.
Yes.
So, okay, let's back up to when you remember your first move. How old were you? What was that experience like? Let's take it back to whatever you can first remember of being in this industry.
Yeah. So I was a little too young for my first move from Grand Rapids to Central Michigan. So once I got to Central Michigan, I'll say I gained consciousness there is what we'll go with.
Yeah.
And we were Chippewas. I would put myself in a very mundane, normal life at that point. We lived about a mile and a half from campus. I was in the midst of my first few grades. I think it was first grade when I moved there. Oh no, that's a lie. I was going into kindergarten, I think. But yeah, that was such a slow start. I still have, I'd say, the same core memories as everyone else. Getting caught in trees kind of thing. That was me. Climbing everywhere. But I think I remember the most was going from Cincinnati to Notre Dame was more when I realized just kind of the scope of the position I'm in and the realities that come with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, with the transition and being a coach's kid, I think that there's everyone kind of always relays the same memory as they remember their parents sitting them down, whether it be their mom or their dad, and saying, hey, just wanted to let you know, we got this opportunity and we're going to be moving. And, you know, it's funny because in normal world, usually you talk about it and there's like a little conversation. We're like, do we want to do this as a family? And in our world, it's like, okay, well, we'll see dad when we see him. Like he's on the next flight. He's out. We're done. Like this is the next transition. And so with that, did your parents sit you down and kind of tell you like, this is what we're doing? Or what do you remember of that process being or going to Notre Dame?
Yeah, so I remember it rather vividly. We actually, it was my fourth grade winter recital I think it was. My little brother was in it. My older brother was a part of it. And unfortunately, my dad was gone. He was in the process of doing these interviews. But by the time he was on his way back, the news had broken. And something that happens in this industry a lot where you're almost playing catch up. And so right after the winter recital, I remember my mom just grabbing all of us. She goes, "We gotta go home." We're like, "Oh, what's the rush?" You know? And that's when we knew, because people in the state, like in the recital, were figuring out on their phones as it was transpiring. And so my parents always tried their best to be the first line of communication, even when it didn't work, because that's just the nature of how this business rolls, as you know. So I think it was an adjustment that I quickly figured out. But the story was a very different from Notre Dame to LSU, simply because I was a lot older. I think also in 2007, when we were, or 2008, circa, when we were going to Notre Dame, social media was kind of just on its rise. The spread of information was a little slower, I would say, versus now. I remember seeing a report, just a speculated report. And I couldn't help but laugh and shrug it off, because that's what you do for most of them. And then I get a call, not even 2 minutes later, from a mom just saying, "Hey, here's what's happening." So, yeah, I've become comfortable with fluidity in that regard.
And when you're younger too, like I feel like this would be such a weird world to live in because, like you mentioned, people were on their phones and they knew about all this, and it's like they're talking about it and they're talking about your dad. I don't know. I just, it's such a foreign concept to me because obviously I understand it from a significant other perspective, but I didn't grow up with that. And so, what was that like? Did people come to school and like talk about like your dad? Like, was that a hard position to be in where your dad is in such a spotlight that it also affects you and your family during like going to school and all of that?
You know, Notre Dame was such a special place for me, simply because it was the longest we spent somewhere, about 10 years. And so luckily with that kind of became something I grew out of, or like it just kind of emulated itself. I remember the first few years of like middle school, I'd have a couple of the guys who might have been rival fans. I had one in particular, he was a U of M fan. And we actually had a bet every year. And the bet ranged from whatever, like on the dress down day that we got for school, he'd have to wear a Notre Dame jersey if we won, vice versa. So I'm grateful for that, where I was in a place where I was very welcomed and accepted, and it wasn't a place of, I'd say, uncomfortability. But it's definitely changed a lot since I've been here, again, where I'd say it was just a whole circuit change of how we're using social media, how these deals are made nowadays. And so I kind of went into a new role once I got here, because I wasn't a kid anymore. And there was a lot more opportunities and places to be and people to see, as you would know. So I would try and also say that I didn't let it affect me that much, simply because I'm my own person as it is. And I've spent most of my professional career specifically to just be my own entity, but also a family entity here as well.
And I think that's great that you said that just about being your own person and having your own identity. And we speak on that a lot on our podcast because it's easy to get wrapped up in trying to be everything for everyone, like in all different departments. And it gets so draining on top of trying to keep up with all of your normal things and actually just be like a normal kid, like going through college. It's really, and now into your master's program too. And one of the things that comes to mind is finding friendships during that time. I feel like with there's some people that you can tell are actually your friends, and then there's some you can tell are friends because of who you are related to. And so did you learn that quick and like very early on? That's like you almost have a radar.
I think I had my radar developed well into my 10 to 13 year range. I think I picked that picked up that skill that most people in their 20s and 30s still don't have. Mm-hmm, so yeah, I picked, and I feel like there's so many nuances that are almost just easier to, you can almost pick it up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
The first question has nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. There's your first red flag. Yep. But at the same time, though, I have always been, I consider myself not someone who had big groups of friends. I didn't do Greek life, but I've always had those two or three people from each stage of my life that has always stayed around. And I think that's something that I had to naturally pick up on given that nature. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually grateful for it at this point in my life because, mm-hmm. you know, as friends come and go, I've been lucky to have those few that have always stayed around and have been my friends for 10, 15 plus years. So yeah, that radar has definitely been in tune for a while.
That's good. That's a good skill to have. I mean, it's hard because I feel like some people, and especially nowadays, I mean, there's so many ways to get around it and people are creepy and yeah. So that's good that you had that developed at a really young age. And when you were growing up and you were at Notre Dame, did you have like, were you friends with like a lot of the coaches' kids or did you kind of have your own like sports or maybe like separate life or did you kind of like blend both?
I would definitely say I blended both. So, you know, a lot of the people that were coaches' kids in my circle were, as you might be familiar, there is the time where you follow and you don't follow. And mm-hmm. most of the time I was lucky to be around the kids that followed and would stay in that institution. And those are, like I said, some of those friends that I still have around to this day. And what's even great about that is I've had instances and friends or coaches' kids' friends who have left, gone to a different school, and then still come back. You know, mm-hmm. it's a very fluid process. And I think something that I've learned that I would say my issue is goodbyes, because most of the time it's a, I'll definitely see you again, or probably won't see you again. You know, it's like, right, there's no in between some time. But yeah, no, I cherish some of those friendships to this day.
Yeah. That's great. No, that is really great. I think coaches' kids become resilient in learning how to just be social with new people and meeting different types of people. And, you know, I think that is one of the big blessings of being a part of this industry is you meet people that you would never meet if you stayed in the same location forever and ever. And with that, I think that's good that you have found 2 to 3 friends to take, you know, from each place. And Brittany and I talk about it a lot that it's definitely quality over quantity, because in this industry, as I'm sure you know, and I'm sure maybe even your dad has talked about it, is it's a small world, even if it feels big, like in the college football world, like everybody knows everybody somehow, some way. And it's good to have those trustworthy people with you along the way. So my next question for you is, when you are going through the season, football season's crazy, what are some fun memories of you and your dad that you have?
Well, I'd like to say, as growing up, the way I, you know, constructed it in my mind was bowl games were our Christmas vacation. That was our family trip. And the best part was not knowing where it would be until the week or two before. all my friends, oh, what are you doing for break? Mm-hmm. Don't know yet.
Yeah.
You'll know when I do.
Yeah.
You know? And so we always leaned into that, you know, as a family. There would be multiple times where that would overlap with Christmas. Spent many Christmases in hotels, which is fine. That was almost part of the tradition in my books. And then usually almost after every bowl game, we've kind of established the three or four days that we get a break mm-hmm. on in the first few days of January. We'll do some type of family trip. And those precious moments mean a lot because you don't get them that often, especially anywhere from July to January.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever feel like when you were growing up, I mean, I know that, I don't know if this was a thing when you're growing up, because I don't remember it when I was, but like donuts with dad or like daddy-daughter dances, like did you have any of that you felt like you ever missed out on because your dad had to work or mm-hmm. wasn't able to be there because of football?
You know, I've actually been to many daddy. Me and him have had several daddy-daughter dances. I remember he would do, I think fourth grade, he did my career day.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
He always found a way to be there, as most dads do.
That's great. I feel like they do so much more of that now than they did when I was growing up. I was like, I don't even remember my dad coming to my school ever. And not because he couldn't, just because I don't remember doing that. So,
Yeah, we have those things, but I feel like it's like even more now. I don't know. Maybe it's social media. I have no
Yeah, it might
idea.
be social media that you just see a lot more of it now.
Don't get me wrong, he didn't take me to and from school, but he was still there as much as he could be, and I think I understood the give and take pretty early on as well.
Yeah, that's really neat. And with social media, I do kind of want to transition to that a little bit because obviously our parents did not grow up with that. And so, not saying that your dad is just out there just tweeting and, surfing the web on Instagram or anything like that, but I have a feeling that some of his fans and the school's fans follow you on social media. And so with that, do you turn your DMs off? What do you do to protect yourself? Because before we were recording, y'all would die laughing. She was just sharing a interesting DM that she got, and I won't share her story, but it is so true. Like, people have no filter and they just want to like tell you how they feel and expect you to just take it. So what do you do to protect yourself on social media?
You know, I think that's what makes, like you said, our generation so different is, we grew up with it and we're the first kind of generation to essentially be the guinea pigs, but also have it throughout our whole lives. And so because of that, I think I was able to develop a relatively thick skin just to what's said, what isn't, or what's said to me, what's said just online. I think you just have to do that. You have to take that how you take every other kind of criticism with just a grain of salt. You know, they got nothing better to do. You know, that's what I just tell myself. You know, if you're texting, if you're messaging me, you must be really bored. I don't have much to contribute for that area of expertise, but if it made them feel better, they got that off their chest.
Yeah, I feel like that you have such a good attitude and perspective about it because it's hard. I mean, some people are mean and you want to like message them back or you want to say something, but it's not even worth it because it's exactly what you said. Like, you have no nothing better to do.
That's what they're looking for,
Yeah,
too. That's
exactly.
what they want.
They want you
I
to
grew up
mess
with
up.
brothers. I grew up with brothers. I know what you're trying to, I know you're trying to get a reaction out of me. You know what I mean? I figured that out. So, yeah, you know, sometimes there's some funny ones out there, though. I'll give some credit. I've gotten some ridiculous ones where I can't help but laugh. I'm just like, I was good.
Oh my gosh, I can only imagine because we have one of our friends, her brother played at Mississippi State, and she would tell us the DMs that she would get about him, and it's like she has anything to do with any of it, and it's just so funny because people think you do, but I want to hear about any of your fan stories because I'm sure you have a bunch, but is there anything that you remember growing up or, recently a fan in the stand type of story that stands out to you?
Okay, I got two. I remember, I think the first one was like, I'd say my first real memory of a fan. It was the 2010 Sun Bowl at Notre Dame. And once we arrived, they gave my dad this huge sombrero, like whole like mariachi band and everything. And there's this little girl with her dad. And I remember seeing her and I waved and she was holding something. And she like showed me and it was this really cute bracelet. And then she tells me she made it for me. And I was only 10, like I was 10, maybe 11 at the time. And I remember keeping that for a very, very long time. It was like a Taylor Swift friendship bracelet. Like it had my
Oh,
name
that's
on it. Like
nice.
she put
Oh,
Grace
that's so
Kelly on it.
sweet.
It was so cute. And that has always stuck with me for some reason, even though I was so young at the time myself. Things changed quickly from Notre Dame to LSU, which kind of goes back to our last question of the social media. Just because of some of the stuff I was getting, I kind of just leaned into it. A lot of my TikToks were kind of just poking fun of the situation because at that point, that was all I could really do.
You know, it's funny. It has to be a little bit of a culture change to go from Notre Dame to LSU because we were at Mississippi State for several years, and it's not anything bad. It's just you think that you know the South when you like live. And I mean, I'm from Texas. Brittany, her husband has family in Austin, so like the in-laws, and we're like, oh, like this is the South. It's fine. And then you move, and you're like, oh, this is the South. Okay, I didn't know that. So it's completely different. And so the people, it is a totally different fan base, not meaning good or bad, but they are like diehard fans, which more power to them. But it's always so fun to hear the stories because we definitely experience some ourselves for sure.
It's not something I would complain about simply because once we got here, the only priorities in people's lives are family, faith, and football. Like that is the three pillars. That is the holy trinity of Southern hospitality. Faith, food, and football. And so when you're in an environment like that, it's so passionate and just such open arms for us personally too, that I couldn't help but enjoy every second of it. And I have. And I think I was going into it a little skeptical. I have never lived in the South, and especially not this far south, as far as you can get. And now there's parts of me that understand why no one wants to leave Louisiana, because there's just good people and good sports, and there's this whole community with the state itself as its own community for football and LSU. And I've never seen that in any of the places that we've been at so far. And yeah, you got to marvel at it too, because when people talk about SEC football specifically, it is its own caliber of environment.
I've been to a couple LSU games, and the atmosphere is so, it's unlike any other. I mean, I've been to a couple different stadiums when we were at Mississippi State. I tried to go to all of them because I was like, this is just, it's exactly what you said, a different caliber. It's just a cool environment no matter what. But LSU fans are, they are something else. They're fun
You
and
can't miss
rowdy.
them.
No, you
You
cannot
can't
miss
miss
them,
them.
but they're a good time. And you know, the stadium, I mean, the stadium is so cool to be in. What was your experience like when you first went to a game there? Because I feel like that stadium is just one of a kind.
It's funny because the first real, I won't even call it a game, but the first time I saw an event in there was our first spring game. And even for a spring game, like the people that showed out, I was like, oh my goodness, like this is no joke. And then my first game was the Southern game, LSU versus Southern. And if you're unfamiliar with the school, it's about 15 minutes from LSU. It's an HBCU that essentially known for their band. And if you look up any clips from that game, they did this awesome performance. But there was this whole, like, essentially, it was the first time they'd ever played each other because it's the two main schools of Baton Rouge. And that was such an amazing first game to be at, because when I say everybody in especially Baton Rouge, but mainly the whole state was there, I mean that. And people weren't expecting, Southern to win by any means, but regardless, everyone was so happy and just so excited. For one, it was the home opener, and two, it was part of Baton Rouge. Like, this game day was so exclusive to, this community. And I got to see that firsthand, and it gave me such a clearer view of what this is all about.
That's a cool intro into kind of a new life that you're going into. Like you get to see it really like from the perspective of the people that live there and love that town and you know, love that state specifically. They love football, like you mentioned. That's just such a cool perspective to have kind of right off the bat.
Absolutely.
No, that is really neat. And now you're on another chapter of your life. So you said that you are a part of a master's program. Talk to us a little bit about what is next for Grace Kelly here. What are you wanting to do? And what is that looking like for you?
Yeah, so I'm in the position as most people in their 20s, early 20s, saying that we've got it all figured out, but we don't. But I'm currently finishing my master's in mass communications and marketing, and I will be done this coming May. And the hopes for that is to go from here to probably a starting job in a sports agency. The goal is to get a law degree and practice as a sports agent in my near future, distant, whatever. But we gotta start somewhere. We gotta climb our little ladder. So
Do you know what sport you want to be an agent for?
I'm pretty fluid there. It could also include coaches. You know, that's a huge market right now as well. We've noticed that recently, just lack of coach representation. I mean, so yeah, there's only about 7% of all NFLPA agents that are women. So it's something that I'm really passionate about and feel like we can make a difference in. You know, there should be more women. There's plenty of women in sports industries, but not in representation of sports athletes or coaches. And so that's where I want to be.
That's so cool. No, I think that's so neat and more power to you because I'm like, bring it on. Like, bring the women in for the sports representation because we need it. And also, it's just like another voice to advocate for those families because I feel like, just even for you, like with this whole entire journey that you've had, you can advocate for families and what they're going through and what they need and to represent them in the best way. So what a cool way to use your platform to make an impact on other people. People's families, and we'll be rooting you on. I know that you can do it, and I know grad school is super tough, so you are so close to wrapping it up there. So yes,
You're so
I'm so
close.
close.
All right. Well, we always ask this question at the end of every single interview, and we'll kind of twist it a little bit for you. But if you could tell your younger self, so if you could tell someone maybe just having a kid in the sports industry, or maybe a kid in the sports industry, something that you've learned that you know now, what would you say?
I think a huge thing for my parents to me was to be involved in my own sports. I think that was a huge thing for them, simply because my life was full of football as it was, that it didn't need to be the only thing that was in my life. And so my parents are always passionate about pursuing new sports. I played lacrosse, I did swimming and diving. So yeah, just being able to indulge in other areas. But if I were to tell my younger self anything, it would be to utilize the resources around you. And that can be as small as using the indoor field to work out. You know, like these things are at our fingertips. And to most people, these are wonderful, you know, things to utilize. I know that once I got here, I was using the weight room once or twice a week because where else can I get those such also nutritionists, you know, even utilizing the people that are working in football operations or coaching, they want to help you just as much as they're helping their players and coaches. So yeah, I've leaned heavily on the people around me that even can include like our coach or our team therapist. Like there's so many different people that offer so many different things mentally, physically to keep you going. So it's a great position to be in because there's not a lot of people that are surrounded by all these different types of coaches that have different specialties, and you put them all in one building and they can really make a difference.
No, that's great. And we appreciate you coming on and sharing about your childhood and where you're at now and just your experience. We've loved following your journey so far and we'll continue to do so and cheering y'all on. But if anybody wants to follow you and not send you a weird DM, but maybe a nice one and ask you a question, where can they find you on Instagram? What's your handle?
Instagram is one grace underscore.
Okay,
I feel like
perfect.
it's been like that since like 2012,
Yeah.
2013. And so when I say it sounds so like easy, one grace underscore. And then everyone's like, one, do you spell out underscore?
Yeah, you
No.
spell it underscore. And you're also on TikTok. So what's the TikTok we got going on?
One Grace Kelly underscore.
Okay.
Switching it up. Switching it up. Switch,
yep. That's my signature. That's
yes. There you go.
Anything with Love the it. One underscore, that's me.
That's you.
That's you. Love it. Well, thank you so much, Grace. We appreciate you coming on and sharing everything with the community.
Ashley, Brittany, thanks so much, guys. This was awesome.
Thank you so much. And thank you to everyone that's listening. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode on More Than a Season Podcast.
You can follow us on Instagram at More Than a Season Podcast or on TikTok at More Than a Season for the latest updates.
If you have enjoyed this episode, please download, subscribe, and leave us a review on your choice of platform.
See you next time.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.